Welcome to Trust Radio, the Investment Trust podcast brought to you by Janus Henderson Investors. I'm Laura Thomas, and in this episode, I'll be discussing ESG with John Bennett, who's the co-fund manager of the Henderson European Focus Trust. This episode is brought to you in association with Janus Henderson Investors. It's for promotional purposes, is not for onward distribution, and the value of an investment can fall as well as rise. Past performance is not a guide to future performance, and nothing in this episode should be construed as advice. Anything said in this episode is the view of the fund manager when we recorded and may have changed as events have developed over time. Our discussion is for illustrative purposes only, and references made to individual securities should not constitute or form part of any offer or solicitation to issue, sell, subscribe, or purchase the security. John, thank you very much for joining me today.
My pleasure.
So, I wanted to dive into the topic of ESG. So my first question is that Europe has led the way in the transition to a greener, more sustainable future for many years through initiatives such as the European Green Deal and more recently the Next Generation EU funding. And there's a growing body of evidence that European companies simply care more about sustainability issues as well. So the past 10 years have very much been the decade of US tech. So could we say that perhaps the next 10 years might be the decade of European sustainability?
I think, as ever in our business, it will never turn out as binary as that, but I think there's more than a grain of truth in what you're saying. So I think the biggest grain of truth, if you like, is that Europe starts off in the lead in this respect. Now, it's one thing to start off in the lead. It's another thing to maintain that lead. So I think you're absolutely right in terms of the sponsorship, not just rhetorical sponsorship, but financial sponsorship of the whole move to sustainability. Europe is taking a lead, not just versus the US, but certainly versus China, etc. Now, that's not, in my view, not an unalloyed positive or a guaranteed win-win for Europe. You're in the lead, but you've got to sustain that lead and build on that lead. And one of the reasons it's not unalloyed is that whenever the state, and this is a generality, but whenever the state gets involved in capital allocation, mind your eye, you know, be wary. The state, regardless of the agenda, and we're talking about the environmental and the sustainability agenda here, but regardless of the agenda, you've seen countless examples in history of the misallocation of capital when the state gets involved. So let's keep our eye on that. I think there's less of a chance of that hurting our companies. I think there's more of a chance of it helping our companies. And what I mean by that is that the state is effectively going to sponsor and indeed underwrite certain investments. Certain investments, they're not here for 1, 2, or 3 years, but sort of generational investments. That's what gives me quite a bit of excitement. So it's about what I'm getting at is I always worry when the state has a direct hand in the allocation of capital. I'm a wee bit less worried here because I'm not convinced it's not so direct. It's a framework. It's a framework, an encouragement, an incentivization for our companies to make the right investments for the right purposes. Now, the last thing I'd say about that is not just the right investments for the right purposes. It's got to also have an economic return on capital. So it's up to us as investors to continue to hold our company's feet to the fire. They do have this very supportive, encouraging framework from Europe that is right now in the lead. Let's sustain that lead and let's make sure our companies still invest capital smartly.
And I guess kind of honing in on that point about companies within the portfolio, you've been keen to stress that the Henderson European Focus Trust takes an inclusionary rather than an exclusionary approach in the context of ESG investing. Can you just elaborate a bit more on how you translate that philosophy into a stock selection methodology?
Yeah, and I'm really glad you used that terminology, exclusion versus inclusion. I really, really don't, in any walk of life, in any walk of society, life, not just my day job of investing my investors' capital, I really don't like the word exclusion. I really don't like the word exclusion. And we've seen it, let's be honest, we've seen cancel culture come in to our society. We are also seeing cancel culture coming in to the world of capitalism, to the world of investing, which I think is frankly madness. I think it's destructive, not constructive, as all forms of exclusion are. I could easily go out there and badge Heft or try to convince the board of Heft to become a green as you like ESG fund in order to capture the zeitgeist, if you like. And, you know, Heft becomes popular for a bit or more popular for a bit. I think that would be for the wrong reasons. And I think a lot of that is going on. And you're getting a lot of cancel culture coming in. You're getting a lot of this exclusion. For example, I won't invest in oil, or I won't invest in steel, or I won't invest in cement. I think you need to turn that 180 degrees. We must include, and you must be, as an active investor, you should be an activist investor when required. And that means holding the feet to the fire of our companies, whether they be in cement or oil or industries that others might deem it popular to exclude. Let's include them if we think they are part of the solution. This is what's really, really important to me. I believe there are companies in cement, even in oil and in steel and in aluminium, who are part, an integral part of the solution to what we're talking about here. Don't cancel them. Don't deplatform them. Don't cancel them. Include them. You give your investors capital to those companies. And historically, you've given your investors capital to companies to maximize returns, return on capital, et cetera, et cetera. That doesn't change. What has changed in recent years is that you must have a parallel objective. And that is what we're talking about, the ESG imperative. And it is an imperative. So let's include them where they are part of the solution. And that's what I really mean. And you hold them to account, whether that's quarterly, semi-annually or annually, just as you would measure as an active manager their returns, their margins, their profitability, their growth, their return on capital. You now measure, as we do assiduously, you now measure the KPIs when it comes to E and S and G. You can only do that if you're an inclusive investor. By the way, Laura, I think we are on the verge of what I would call ESG 2.0. And what I mean by that is people saying, look, we've been a bit blunt, more than a bit blunt on this exclusion versus inclusion binary approach. We need to go to 2.0. We need to include. I mean, to work with these companies, we need to see how can Holcim in cement be part of the solution. A company that's just developed in partnership with a whole bunch of other parties, the world's first 3D printed bridge, a bridge that will support vehicles, for example, fully recyclable ad infinitum, fully recyclable forever, every material that goes into that bridge. We will end up with environmentally friendly construction materials and other materials, but we will only do so if we don't cancel these companies. Last point about cancelling them, and not if we don't give them the investors' capital, then their cost of capital only goes up. They derate and they derate and they derate. And guess what happens, or what can happen, in my view, what will happen? They'll end up going off the stock market. And into whose hands will they go? Will they go into private equity on the cheap? Will they go to Chinese owners? Will they go to Russian owners or other owners who may, and I emphasize, may have less, what would I say, less intensity and place less priority on the transparency of ESG? We need to be really careful of corporate cancel culture.
And you touched on a couple of sectors there, and indeed actually Holcim as well. But my next question there was, you know, actually to ask you, you know, if you could give a recent portfolio acquisition or an example, which really is a strong manifestation of that inclusionary approach, and perhaps might have been a stock that you might not have been disposed to acquire, you know, if you were in an exclusionary scenario.
Well, certainly. I mean, it's not a recent acquisition. I mean, we have discussed Holcim. Holcim is there for a number of reasons. All the traditional reasons that we buy investments: best in class management, I think a very interesting valuation, improving returns profile, all the things that we try to, with a non-ESG hat on, that we would try to identify. But the ESG angle, in our view, is very, very strong for Holcim. The problem is it comes from cement, and so many, and I had it recently, a broker on the sell side just said to me recently, in June actually said, John, I'm hearing more and more investors, fund managers saying I can't invest in Holcim. I can't because it's excluded because it's cement. I'm sorry, but I think this is dumb. This is really dumb and not constructive, not creative, but dumb for all parties, all stakeholders, including investors, because Holcim is a world leader in the decarbonisation of cement. And that's a key facet of our investment thesis. Another very big investment for us, in fact, that so the top two are Holcim and UPM Kymeny. UPM Kymeny, it's in the materials sector. Just because being called the materials sector these days seems enough for you to be excluded. What kind of materials? Well, UPM Kymeny is a great example of moving from the old to the new. And that is moving from being a pulp and paper company to pulp derivatives. So pulp derivatives, the compounds, that the products that come from waste pulp, for example, the pulp waste in the production process, into biofuels, biochemistry. You know, the replacement of a PET bottle, those ghastly plastic bottles that we've all been drinking our soft drinks or whatever from, or water even, bottled water, and those environmentally damaging PET bottles. UPM Kymeny in the forefront, in the vanguard of an environmentally friendly replacement to that product. And yet it came from an old industry, a seemingly old industry of pulp and paper, just like Holcim, an old industry in cement, but moving to the vanguard of looking for environmentally friendly substitutes, replacements for these old products. This is super exciting, and we should include. So Holcim and UPM, I think, are really good examples of include them because of their ESG agenda. Unfortunately, there's too much marketing by fund management companies around ESG. Let's look at the reality of what's really going on and how we can make a difference as active fund managers. And I think we can make a difference as active fund managers, not just by investing in the obvious ESG plays, if you like, many of which are super expensive because they're thematic, but let's look at the unobvious. Great investment returns, incidentally, tend to be generated by looking and being prepared to embrace the unobvious. And I think the examples I've spoken about are good examples of the unobvious when it comes to ESG. Ask not where the company is today or where the company's come from in the last 50 years. Where's it going to be in 5 years in the context of ESG? And that's what really excites us about even ArcelorMittal, which I would not have been, which is steel, carbon steel, a big carbon emitter historically, now in the vanguard in Europe, in a European steel industry, which is buttressed by what you talked about earlier about the whole green initiative and agenda at the political level. That's got very real and very meaningful implications for the European steel industry, not least by very high tariffs on high carbon emitting Chinese steel coming to Europe, which historically destroyed the European steel industry. That's being defended now at the border, if you like, by this environmental agenda, by the green agenda, by European governments. ArcelorMittal is a beneficiary of that. And therefore, ArcelorMittal investors are beneficiaries of that. And so, again, ask not where ArcelorMittal came from in the past. We know that. But where's it going to be in 5 and 10 years? It's going to be leading the charge in the decarbonisation of steel.
John, as ever, great to hear from you. So thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe, rate, review, and share this with anyone you think will also find it interesting. If you want to learn more about investment trusts, we have a wealth of information available on our website, which you can find in the show notes. Glossary.
ESG stands for Environmental, Social and Governance, which are three key criteria used to evaluate a company's ethical impact and sustainable practices. Return on capital, a profitability ratio used to indicate how effective a company is at turning capital into profit. Private equity, investment into a company that is not listed on the stock exchange. Like infrastructure investing, it tends to involve investors committing large amounts of money for long periods of time.
For the period of the 29th of December 2017 to the 31st of December 2018, the share price change was -12.3% and the net asset value change was -5.4%. for the period of the 30th of December 2016 to the 29th of December 2017, the share price change was 13% and the net asset value change was 8%. For the period of the 31st of December 2015 to the 30th of December 2016, the share price change was 6.1% and the net asset value change was 7.5%. The company's performance is not benchmarked against any specific stock market index. All performance, cumulative growth, and annual growth data is sourced from Morningstar. Before investing in an investment trust referred to in this podcast, you should satisfy yourself as to its suitability and the risks involved. You may wish to consult a financial advisor. Past performance is not a guide to future performance. The value of an investment and the income from it can fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount originally invested. Nothing in this podcast is intended or should be construed as advice. This podcast is not a recommendation to sell or purchase any investment. It does not form part of any contract for the sale or purchase of any investment. References made to individual securities should not constitute or form part of any offer or solicitation to issue, sell, subscribe, or purchase the security. Janus Henderson Investors, one of its affiliate advisors or its employees, may have a position mentioned in the securities mentioned in this podcast. Issued in the UK by Janus Henderson Investors. Janus Henderson Investors is the name under which investment products and services are provided by Janus Capital International Limited. Registration number 359-4615. Henderson Global Investors Limited. Registration number 906-355. Henderson Investment Funds Limited. Registration number 267-8531. Henderson Equity Partners Limited. Registration number 260-6646. Each registered in England and Wales at 201 Bishopsgate, London, EC2M3AE, and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. And Henderson Management SA, registration number B22848 at 2 Rue de Bitburg, L-1273, Luxembourg, and regulated by the Commission de Surveillance du Secteur Financier. Janus Henderson, Janus Henderson, Perkins, Intech, Velocity Shares, Knowledge Shared, Knowledge Shared, and Knowledge Labs are trademarks of Janus Henderson Group PLC or one of its subsidiaries. Copyright Janus Henderson Group PLC.